Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin, and we hope you are all safe and healthy during this incredibly difficult time. We've been doing this podcast for about a year with our monthly luncheon speakers, and due to the crisis that we are currently in, we want to change it up a little bit. We're starting a new guest series called Voices of Light. We know there are a lot of people suffering out there right now, whether it is physically, emotionally, or economically, and our hope is to bring you guests who can uplift, inspire, and have honest conversations with us. We plan to have these interviews on a regular basis, and hopefully this can help us all get through this together. We are so grateful and honored to have with us today President E. Gordon Gee, who is currently serving his second term as president of West Virginia University. His first term was from 1981 to 1985. President Gee has held more university presidencies than any other American. He was head of the University of Colorado from 1985 to 1990, of Ohio State University from 1990 to 1997, of Brown University from 1998 to 2000, of Vanderbilt University from 2000 to 2007, and of the Ohio State University for a second time from 2007 to 2013. Time magazine rated President Gee one of the top 10 college presidents in the United States. President Gee, welcome and thank you.
That sounds like a resume of a guy who can't hold a job. or I just get out ahead of the sheriff, one of the two. Anyway, honored to be here. And appreciate the Management Society, appreciate BYU, all that it does. You know, I spent some time there with my dear friend Rex Lee when he was dean of the law school and I was the associate dean. And and Bruce Hafer, we started that law school together, and it was just a joy. I know it's doing very well now.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and that was going to be my question for you, President Gee, is for those of our listeners who may not be aware, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe including your connection to BYU?
Yeah, well, I am I'm a devout member of the LDS Church to start off with, although I have had to travel so much that sometimes they forget to contact me, so I'm an escape artist, right? But born in Vernal, Utah, graduated obviously from the local high school. Went to University of Utah as an undergraduate. Went to a mission in southern Germany in Bavaria. And halfway through, I was called to be one of the first two Italian missionaries. So I never went to Italy, but I had a great Italian experience in Germany, and then graduated from the University of Utah. Went to Columbia to law school, where I got both my law degree and my doctorate. And then I clerked for the chief judge of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. Then became the associate dean of the law school at University of Utah, became a judicial fellow and worked for the chief justice in Washington for several years, then came back and joined the BYU law school, where I was the associate dean until I became dean of the law school at West Virginia University. And then I was only that for about 18 months, and the law faculty hated me so much they made me president. So, and then the rest is history, as a matter of fact.
The rest is that other stuff that I read that you said.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. And I'm wondering what makes a great university in your mind, and conversely, what makes a great university president, President Gee?
Well, you know, what makes a great university is that, and I think that this is one of the real challenges for universities right now, because I think that we have become more political than university. And I think that, I believe that the first requirement for a university is to be a place of ideas, good ideas, bad ideas, challenging ideas, obnoxious ideas, and with the ability to be able to have freedom to talk about that those ideas and letting the marketplace prevail. The minute that we start to manipulate that notion, that we cancel, that we don't invite people on to speak, that we have students fearful of saying what they really think, then we have lost our ability to call ourselves a university. So number one is to make certain that ideas are prevalent and welcome. Number two is obviously be very focused on students. universities don't exist in a vacuum. It's about training good leaders and making sure that these leaders go out to make a difference in the world. And then also I think that a certain number of institutions called major research universities need to make certain that they are discovering new ideas, that they are discovering the cure for cancer, that they're contributing to society in different ways. But I think universities in many ways are the most robust of institutions if done well, and the most fraught with problems if they're not done very well. As to what makes a good university president, if I had that answer, I would bottle it and sell it. I think the three ingredients to be a good university president are, number one, you have to have a very thick skin. In today's world, you'll never survive if you can't take a lot of criticism. Number two, you have to have a good sense of humor. You have to be able to laugh at yourself. Laughter is the antidote to the kind of toxic atmosphere we deal with. And the third thing is to what I like to call nerves like sewer pipes, i.e. you just, when you make a decision, don't then start to second guess yourself all the time. You have to remember that no one has more information than you do. And if they had the same information you had, more than likely they'd make the same decision.
Well, that's great advice. President Gee, we're going through some difficult times right now, as you know. What are some things that we can do to make these times better for ourselves and also for those we come in contact with?
Kindness, thoughtfulness, listening to other people, not yelling at others, but rather having a chance to have common conversations about uncomfortable issues. I think that that's very important. I also think that we need to understand that we do have structural challenges in this country. We've kind of got, at the moment, we've got three or four different pandemics going on. The first pandemic is the virus itself, and it's unforgiving and unrelenting in many ways. The second pandemic we have is what I call collateral damage, particularly among these 18 to 22 or 24-year-olds, because very few of them, even if they have the virus, know they have it. But yet what they do have, because of the encumbrances that we've put on them, teenage suicide in this age group is the highest it's ever been, depression, opioid addictions, alcoholism, a host of other issues. I think that this generation, the so-called Z generation, identifies themselves as terribly lonely. There's a loneliness factor there that I think really bodes ill for our society long term. And when the pandemic is done and it will burn itself out in some way or other, then we're going to have a lot of real damage that goes on. But the third thing is financial. Obviously, we've got tremendous financial issues. The fourth thing is kind of the fact that we have issues around race and gender and other issues that need to be talked about openly and dealt with positively and constructively, rather than in a pugilistic way. And then finally, we have this kind of toxic atmosphere. We're 30 plus days away from an election that I'm not certain we've seen anything quite like it since maybe, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams ran against each other, which was pretty toxic then. So problems are galore, but opportunities abound. I think what's going to come out of this, though, is the fact that the coronavirus, the pandemic, may be one of the best things to happen, because most of the issues have collapsed that we thought would happen 10 years from now. I mean, I'm a Luddite, and here I am on a Zoom call with someone from Salt Lake City, pretty wild. And so that notion of the collapsing of many of the issues that we thought would be in the future, 10 years from now has happened in 10 weeks. I think that's going to create a whole different environment for us.
And I love what you said about kindness. I sent you an email, I think maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and you were so kind in your response. And I feel like, we've had good email conversations since then. You've, I think to me you are a kind person and don't need to be, and I that's something that that I've always admired about you. President Yee, this is the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast. How can we be a moral and ethical leader in the world today, and how can students and faculty at schools like BYU be instrumental in that?
Well, I think a place like BYU is incredibly important. I think that institutions need to be true to themselves. They need to have a purpose. And I think individuals need to have a purpose. The purpose should not be making money. The purpose should not be to have a faster car or a bigger house. The purpose should be about how do we make society better. I love the fact that, you know, I've been president of two of the most highly selective universities in the country, Brown and Vanderbilt. And I'd wake up in the morning and I'd say, this is a real privilege to be here, but I didn't know why I was there. Here I am in West Virginia University, a great public university, but it's a land-grant institution established by Abraham Lincoln, and it had a purpose, which was to make education available to everyone. And I think that that's the moral imperative that we really do need to be concerned about individuals instead of rankings and a variety of other things. And then individually, I think we need to live by what we've been taught by our parents and what we've been taught by our religion, and that is to make certain that we understand that people have immense challenges and that our job is to be weavers. We need to weave the good in people back together again so that families prevail and life can go on in ways in which opportunity is seen. We need to constantly encourage people, inspire them to look through the windshield instead of through the rearview mirror. I think that we can do that. And places like BYU are very important. I said to one of my friends who is the president of a very important Catholic institution, I said, you know, one of the things that I'm concerned about Catholic education is the fact that it has lost its moorings. And I thought he was going to try to convert me at that point. But what happened was that I think that if you're a Catholic institution, you should be fiercely Catholic. Mm-hmm. If you're a Mormon institution, you should be fiercely Mormon. If you're a land-grant institution, you should be fiercely about the commonalities of the human condition. And I think that that's the calling for BYU. We have a strong ethical opportunity as an institution to lead by example, but by example that comes from our faith and our forefathers. And those are the kinds of things that I think institutions should be about. Great. It's great to have a wonderful football team, which BYU does have right now. I watch them play, and thank goodness they're not playing us. They've got that very big, mature line. But saying that, that's for 3.5 hours on a Saturday afternoon. The real purpose of BYU is to be a beacon on the hill for 6.5 days a week, and I hope that that's where you find yourself.
That's great. President Yee, in a time of social distancing, which we're in right now, how do you make connections that encourage and motivate people for good?
Yeah, I think you have to work really hard at it. You know, I'm a social animal. My daughter always joked about the fact that my idea of a quiet evening at home was to have 400 people to dinner. And, you know, and so here I've been, you know, I'm in that. I'm 76 years of age. I've had a defibrillator. I have asthma. I mean, they have guard dogs and armed guards and drones out in front of my house, and they dress me in an orange jumpsuit. I mean, they're not letting me out. I'm a danger to society or to myself. But I think that what I've tried to do is I've tried to figure out ways in which I can use this kind of a connection to continue to carry on the personal connection. I do a lot of telephoning. I write notes. I see things. I know that a lot of people are hurting. I see things that touch my heart. I try to reach out to people in a number of ways. I think that, you know, normally you don't have to work hard to be a friend. You don't have to work hard to be in contact with other human beings. Now we have to work at it, so therefore we need to be very thoughtful and do it rather than sit and watch, watch 81 episodes of some streaming show.
The Office.
That's fun. That's fun. But in the longer term, we may have wasted our time in terms of meaningful difference that we can make.
Well, I love that answer, and I guess my last question, President Guy, is what have you learned in your life to help help you feel prepared to lead during these perilous times?
Well, I tell you, I think we all love to celebrate success. But the thing that took me the longest time to learn was that you really do have to measure your mistakes and learn from them. And I think that probably is my number one issue is to really try to learn from my mistakes. And that's hard because all of us have an ego and we don't want to admit that we've made mistakes, right? But I tell a story, though, that I think is probably pretty characteristic, and that is the fact, as you can see, I wear bow ties. I have done since I was 15. My father took me to Salt Lake City from this little small town. Saw a guy wearing a bow tie and always wanted to have one. I wear khaki pants. I wear sweaters. I go out late at night with the students. I do crazy stuff that no sane human being would do, and I've done it for 40 years. And when I first became president here, I was about three or four, as I say, I was very young. I was 36. And so about 4 months into my presidency, I was having a rough time. I didn't know even how to spell university, let alone run one. And so these two old guys came in to see me. I thought they were old, at least. They were probably 40, but I thought they were really old. One was the dean of the libraries and one was the chair of the Department of English. You can imagine what they're like. They kind of had to screw their shoes on and off, and so they came and they said, "Mr. President, we're here to tell you that you're not doing a good job." And I said, "Oh, thanks. Why do you think that is?" They said, "Well, you don't look and you don't act and you don't talk like a university president. You wear bow ties, go out and do all this crazy stuff." And so I thought, that's right. The only university president I really knew at that time was James Fletcher, who had been the president of the University of Utah, tall, gray-haired, a very magnificent figure. And I thought, well, I'm 5'6", so it's hard to be tall at that time. I started wearing three-piece suits and long ties and tried to be a little bit more distance and tried to be a little bit more appropriate in quotes. And guess what? Two things happened. One is I was still failing, and the second thing was I was miserable. And so one day I just woke up and I said, "Hey, look, this is who I am. I'm going to be who I am. I'm not going to change that. God has given me certain gifts and I'm going to play to them. And if I fail, then I'm going to fail on my own terms." And, here it is 40 years later and I'm still a university president. Those guys are dead. So I think that, the lesson of life is to be who you are and play to your strengths, and not let your failings overwhelm your strengths, I think.
Mm-hmm. What a great lesson, and what a great way to end. Thank you so much, President Guy, for your time. We sure appreciate you.
and thanks, Dave, and it's wonderful to see you, and let me know anytime I can be of help. I'd love to. I think you guys do a great job.
Well,
talk to you later.
President Guy. All right, have a great day, and we'll talk to all of our listeners again next week with our next episode of Voices of Light. Have a great day.